Okay, at this time, it truly is a privilege, and with great pleasure, I'd like to introduce our speaker for this evening, Jack G. from Huntington Beach.
Hi, I'm Jack Grisham, and I'm an alcoholic. I just dropped my book, and then... But you know what? I noticed it was kind of interesting. I was sitting back there and then walked up here. And then when I was walking up here, my butt wasn't tight. And the meaning, like, I don't know if you ever felt like, I remember when I was newly sober and after, for a long time afterwards, if I went in a store and didn't buy anything, and then when I walked out through the front door, my butt would get really tight while I was walking out. And like, it was like I was shoplifting or something. Because I wanted to just walk out and go, I just didn't find what I needed. You know, I mean, just kind of, because it's suspicious, you know, you didn't buy anything. So, and I remember a couple times I used to buy one small thing, even that I didn't need it, just so they knew I bought, I know, it's crazy, whatever, anyway. I just thought of that, and then I dropped my big book, and anyway, I'm glad to be here. Thank you very much for having me, and you know, I like to talk about anonymity on the internet, and my friends and I, we do this thing, and we call it the coffee club. So it's not, no double vowels. Every once in a while, I'll catch somebody posting a double vowel on my page. So no AAs on the page, you know, so I'll delete it or whatever, and I'll say, just call it coffee club. And I do a lot of stuff where I travel and I go out of the country a lot and I run into all sorts of people and they don't know what I do. They just know I don't drink. That's all they know. And then sometimes they'll hear this coffee club talk about making an amends to somebody. And so every once in a while I'll get these little notes and they'll go, I don't understand what's going on over there. What do you guys do at this coffee club? You know, it's like, oh, do you have a drinking problem? They go, no. I go, well, then don't worry about it. But it's funny because you wouldn't believe how many of them had a drinking problem. And I had a really funny one. This guy was in Alabama. And he goes, hey, I noticed this so-and-so. You're talking about this. You were talking about cleaning something up or doing something. He goes, what is that about? And this is in a private talk. And I don't really know this guy, right? And I go, well, I don't drink. He goes, oh, I think I should probably not drink either. He goes, so what do you do? I go, well, because now we're talking privately. You know, I say, well, you know, I go to AA. That's why I'm an AA member, you know. And while I'm talking to him, I know what city he's in Alabama. So I'm looking it up on the internet, and I go, oh, yeah, there's a noon meeting at the Unitarian Church over on Highway 32. He goes, how do you know that? That's right by my house. He's all panicked, you know. And it's a private message. Nobody can see it, you know. I go, oh, yeah, go over there, man. Go over there. You know, and if you don't like that one, then go behind the Tasty Freeze on Route 75. Like something, you know, something else. Well, he's still sober. He wrote me back. He goes, I went. I liked it, you know. And I like it when they like us. They're supposed to like us. You know, I'm a book guy. And that can be scary. Do you know what I mean? Because a lot of people that say they're a book guy, they're not really book guys, because they say they're book guys and they say they work the program as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. But then when you start asking questions, you really find out, no, they're not. You're not working the program exactly as outlined in the Big Book. You know, supposedly, you know, and don't get angry with me. This is just, well, get a, I don't live here. Get mad if you want. Whatever it is. You know, you want to spend your night mad, get mad. That's fine. But, you know, it's real interesting if you look at what Bill said, what works best. Because he said it. There's a reason why we're sitting here sober. It's because he wrote this book. This is what? We got a piece of this, you know. And what Bill said best is he said, hey, no axes to grind. No promises to make. No, you don't have to please anyone. Which is interesting. No people to please. Now, that's in the Big Book. This is in the Big Book, as directed, right out of the Big Book. The program, as Bill said, this works best. Then I run into a lot of people who, if they don't do exactly what their sponsor says, their sponsor won't work with them. If they don't make the calls on time, do this, take this direction, well, Bill said that there is no one to please, and that means us. These new people do not have to please us. They don't have to please us. That's a promise in here. That is a promise in the big book that I see many people refuse to allow the new person to have. They don't need to please us. There's all sorts in the big book like that. When you really look at it, and sometimes I get into it with these guys that say they're trying to bring the program back to the way it was, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know, why don't you just do the program as the book lays out, and you're not going to have to bring it back to anything. Just do what the book says. Don't order people around. Don't run people's lives. Don't do any of this. Don't make them please you. Act like this. Act like this, and no one will walk away from us. Nobody. I mean, I've gotten on the internet, and just for the heck of it, I've looked up FAA. You know what I'm saying? If you're bored, you know, you know, if you get bored, you know, type in on the Google search bar, Safari or Firefox. I'm not involved in outside issue. I don't care what search bar you use. I have no opinion on that, but it's so interesting. Type in F letter, 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 space, AA, and see what comes up. See what comes. I dare you. I dare you to take your own inventory and see what people say about you. Take it. Because you know what's so funny? Do you know that not one person on there complains about anything in this book? None of it. They don't complain about one thing in this book. I have never seen a complaint that says, FAA, they let you believe or not believe in whatever God you choose. It's not in there. I've never seen one complaint that says that. I have never seen one complaint that says, FAA, they take an inventory, check their character defects, and try to straighten it out. I have never seen someone complain about that. I have never seen someone complain where they say, FAA, they pay back their debts. Never seen it. I have never seen that in there. Screw AA, they help people for free. Not in there. Not in there whatsoever. Do you know what they complain about? They complain when we step outside of this and we start playing God instead of, as the book says, quit playing God. That's what they complain about. I dare you to find a complaint on that internet that complains about what this program says we're supposed to do. You will not find one, because I have looked. I've looked, and I haven't found it. Anyway, and I wonder how strong our program would be if we actually did what the book said. Did what it said. You know, that we didn't have an opinion on outside issues, that we didn't take... And taking drugs is not an outside issue. That's not an outside issue, which is so interesting also, because a lot of these guys did. But anyway, I'll get into this. And somebody said sometimes to me, they'll go, why don't you stick to your story? This is my story. This is my story. More than half of my life, the last almost 20, over 27, coming up on 28 years, more than half of my life has been spent in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is my story. Working the steps is my story. Dealing with this, how to be sober for 27 years with a wife, kids, crazy job, that's my story. My story isn't the 6 years or whatever where it totally went downhill with my drinking. And even getting into that, when I hear people say, sometimes they'll misquote the book and they'll go, okay, I got to remember this. It's what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. No, it's not. No, it's not. It's what we were like, what happened, and what we were like now. Guess what? It is exactly the same. It has not changed. I talk to newcomers all the time. It is still the same. Same thing. The drunkenness, the feelings, and I can tell you what I was like. What I was like, I can tell you exactly what I was like, and it sums it up on page 52, one of my favorites. Like, I always see all these pamphlets about the 20 questions, the 40 questions, the 60 questions, you know, pamphlet about all this stuff. I wonder why they've never written a pamphlet based on the bedevilments. Why isn't that pamphlet in there? Because this program starts where the drinking stops, so let's talk about how we are when we're stopped. How are we when we're sober? How does it feel to not have a drink in you? How does that feel? when you're out there. I know what it feels like to have a drink in me. It feels good. When I was out there drinking, you would much rather see me with a drink in me, guaranteed. You run into me on the street, you want me drunk. You know what I'm saying? It's like this Wild Animal Kingdom shows, you know what I mean? When they're going out after the tigers and they go out and sex check a tiger, not once do they sex check a sober tiger. Not once. You know what I'm saying? It's like they shoot the thing with a tranquilizer gun and then they get out and grab its balls or whatever they're doing up over there. You know what I'm saying? It's like the tiger's just laying there on its back, you know, and they can measure it, they can check it out, right? Never once do they run up and go, oh, there's a sober tiger, I'm in. Let's get that one. Yeah, come back with no arms, guy. You know, it's like you want me sedated. You want me with a couple in me. So, when I'm sober, bad news. Bad news, because guess what? When I wake up sober, now what? Now what? The condition's in full effect. The condition is in full effect, and I can easily look for it right here in the bedevilment. Right here in the bedevilments, we were having trouble with personal relationships. Yeah, I got warrants out for my arrest. I'm living at my mother's. I got one girl pregnant and married to another girl of questionable age. There wasn't one person happy with me. Nobody. I have the most codependent mother in the world. I mean, my mom, the Al-Anon people never got one hand on my mom, man. Not one. Not one. You know what I mean? The blood of the lamb was spray painted on our front door and the Al-Anons just drifted right on down the street. They never got up in there. Now, I got arrested for an armed robbery, which I didn't do. I didn't do it. And I really didn't do it this time, right? This was, like, I really didn't do it. And it was funny, my buddy Michael and I, we were discussing my romantic entanglements. And my oldest daughter's mother, the night she moved in, I was in jail for armed robbery. I was arrested that morning and she moved in, so she's putting her things on the shelf while I'm in jail. You know, it's like, hey, maybe that's a good reason to get out of here, babe. You know, but she didn't, she stayed. So anyway. So on this arrest that I didn't do, swear to God I didn't do, my lawyer is looking at me and he says, hey, Jack, just tell me how it went down. I go, it didn't go down. He goes, come on. How'd it go down? Who was in on this with you? I go, it didn't go down. And he goes, suit yourself. You're looking at 5 years on this one. I go, oh my, you know, dude, it didn't go down. And he goes, what you need to do is get some character reference letters. Do you know that no one, including my mother, would go on record saying that I was okay? Nobody. To know that nobody would say that I was okay. My personal relationships were a mess. They were a mess with everyone. And it was funny. It seemed like every woman I ever saw all of a sudden developed the same genetic trait of this look on their face. It was anger, disgust, and all in one. You know what I mean? And when I saw that face, I think, God, I've seen that face a bunch of times. I don't know what's happening, but I know I've seen this face, this same face. You know, hurt, betrayal, anger, terror, frustration, fear, all wrapped into one look. And they all had it. I think it's some crazy primal genetic human look that hasn't even been used since the Ice Age. It's a look that only I could get from these women. So yes, my personal relationships were a mess. You know, and I wonder sometimes when we do the 20 questions, why don't we ask the new guy, hey, how's your personal relationships going, bud? What's happening? Whoa, I'm out of the big bed. You bet your ass you are. You know, yeah, I'm drug testing at work. Yeah, I'm so-and-so. Yeah, I'm in here on a court card. How's that going, bud? Anyway, I move down to the next one. We couldn't control our emotional natures. I don't know if anyone else in here got lied to because the truth was dangerous. My family would rather lie to me than tell me the truth, because they don't know what reaction the truth is going to get. So a lie works better. My friends were afraid to tell me the truth because they didn't know what was going to happen to them if they told me the truth. What's that reaction going to be? And even years into sobriety, it was the same thing. I remember I asked my mom, and I, by this time I was sober about 10 years, I asked my mom where her brother had been. I go, oh, how's Travis doing? What's happening with Travis? And she goes, and just doesn't say anything. I go, well, hey, mom, what's up with Travis?
Dead.
Huh? Dead. What? What? Did you say he died? She goes, yeah, he died. I go, when did he die? She goes, about a year or two ago. I go, how come you didn't tell me? She goes, I didn't want you getting all upset. So she didn't tell me. So my emotional natures, outbursts, screaming. I remember when I was newly sober, and this is a share that maybe that people probably can't even understand these days because phones aren't made of hard plastic and they're big anymore. But when I got sober, there was no cell phones, right? They were big on the wall, hard plastic thing. A cell phone was a 20-foot stretchy cord on the phone, you know what I mean? On a long cord. I used to brag. I would go to the meeting. We'd go to the rap center, and I would say, "I'm 15 years sober, and I'm 15 days sober, and we still have the same phone." That was what I bragged about, because normally I would be on the phone, I'd be talking to somebody, and all of a sudden I'd get angry, pissed off, and the phone's just against the wall. You know, it's against the wall. It's out the window. It's being thrown. It's being stomped, and my poor mom's going down and buying another phone. I'm 27 days sober now, and we still have the same phone. You know, my emotional outbursts were out of control. Like a child, a baby. They talk about it in the big book. Childlike, grandiose. Yeah, you're right. I'm a baby, is what I was when I got in here. And it's so funny, because I look at babies, because I've got five kids. That's a long story. But anyway, I have seen babies, and I've changed diapers, I've seen whatever. And you know what? When babies get upset, there's two things they want. Do you know what a baby wants when it's upset? It wants the bottle or it wants the tit. Bottle or the tit. I'm 27 years old. I get upset. I want one of two things. The bottle or the tit. Nothing had changed. There had been no emotional breakthrough whatsoever. Do you know when you get a little baby and you shake a rattle out of it, it realizes the rattle's there? But when you take the rattle away, the rattle ceases to exist? When my wife was in front of me shaking, I realized she was there. When my wife was no longer in the room or gone, she ceased to exist. So I acted as a man who did not have a wife. Talk about emotional natures. That was my emotional nature. When I ran up in here, I can move down. A prey to misery and depression. I rule at misery and depression. I remember I was trying to hang myself one day. I had Marvin Gaye on, and you know, because you know he's black, I'm black. You know, whatever's going on. You know, I got Marvin on, and I'm at my mother's house, and I have put boards over the windows of the bedroom. You know, I'm in there hammering and doing things. You know, my mother's like, "What are you doing in there? What are you doing? Leave me alone. Leave me alone." You know, so I'm naked. You know, I got the clothes off and I'm going to hang myself. And I start thinking, okay, you know, I need a note. You know, I got to, you know, it's like, there's nothing like, you know, drinking and then toss, you know, sprinkle a little cocaine over the vodka and start writing and solving problems. And, you know, and so I decide I'm naked. I got the rope. I'm ready to roll. And so I'm thinking I need a note. I need a note. So I write this. It was really a beautifully crafted piece of literature. And I write this note. But then I realize, what am I going to do with it? Because I'm thinking ahead, right? And I'm realizing, you know, I got to do something with this note. I don't want it to get lost. Or, you know, if the body kicks, I don't want it going under the bed. I don't know what's going to happen with the note. And I want them to know exactly right away how hurt I am. Right? So I take a safety pin. Thank God for my punk rock background. And I just pin it to my chest. Stick a little pin in there. And so I've got the note pinned. and I get up on this little stool, and I've got the noose around my neck, and Marvin's playing. What's going on? You know, Marvin's playing, and I'm like, crying. I used to say I jumped. I did not jump. At least I don't remember jumping. I remember falling is what I remember, and taking the cabinet down with me. So, funny now, not funny then. And, you know, a prey to misery and depression. And I used to love my friend Frank Honeycutt, one of the guys that mentored me, Frank. I loved Frank dearly, and he was always nice to me. Frank always cut me slack, no matter what. He was always, you know, there was only one time Frank yelled at me, and it's personal, so I'm not going to get into it. But it was, and it was funny because he'd always talk about not cussing, but he let me slide on it. You know, he'd go, "You're doing the best you can do. Just keep doing it, partner." That's what he'd say, right? And anyway, because I apologized one time for dropping the F-bomb in a meeting. Frank goes, "You give it to him how you give it to him, young man. Don't let up. Don't let up." You know, and anyway, but Frank used to say, "The one thing you can say about self-pity is, it is sincere." All right, maybe it'll take you a couple minutes, some of you. All right, anyway. Because when I felt bad for myself, I meant it. Now, I may not feel bad for you, but I feel bad for me. I'm into it. I'm fully into feeling bad for me. A prey to misery and depression. Depression, late night rides, you know, getting drunk, crying. I remember I got in a fight with my friend, Joe had mentioned Paul McFadden. Paul is one of these guys that grew up in the Lakewood area of Long Beach. You know, big guy, gnarly Scottish guy that likes to box. You know, he's like one of those guys, gets drunk and wants to fight. I think he's got Long Beach spelled wrong on his back. Whatever, you know, whatever. You know, he's one of those. If you have drank in Long Beach, you have probably fought Paul at one time. And so Paul and I were best friends. We were always hanging together, drinking together. And I remember we got in one of those fights, those drunk guy fights that you get in, you know, when you're both drunk, right? And so it's a standoff in the street, you know, and we're like looking at each other. He goes, "Man," he goes, "I love you, man, but I'm going to have to kill you this time, man." You know, he's like, he's crying. And then he starts really crying. And he goes, "You know what? Do you know what?" He goes, "I'm not going to be your emotional tampon any longer." So, your emotional tampon. And because I'd be crying, and Paul would put his arm around me and go, "It's okay, Big Jim. It's okay." You know, it's like, because that's what he called me, Big Jim. I used a lot of different names. But, you know, anyway, so it was one. So every time I see a tampon, "What's up?" You know, and he's still drinking. So anyway, okay, so we couldn't make a living. No, I couldn't. I was employable. Don't get me wrong. I'm one of those idiots. I'm employable. I walk in, I can clean up. I walk in, I look solid. I walk in anywhere and I know just enough about everything to make you think I know what's happening. You know what I mean? "Oh, yeah, that's the 135 I see they just used on that. What a fool to use the 135. You know it's the 137. Ha, 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 you're hired." You know, like one of those. But then after a few days, stuff starts getting recognized that there's a problem here with this guy. There's some issues going on here. He's wearing the same clothes he's had on for 4 days. I was selling cars. You know, that's a job. A car, you know, selling car, that's a great alcoholic job, man. You know what I mean? They never wanted to give me my paycheck. It's like, "Come on, man, just stay. I go, "Give me my check." They go, you'll leave. "No, I'll stay." "Come on, stay." You know, it's like, they didn't want to give me my check. And sometimes they would get on the loudspeaker at the lot because I would get served restraining orders on the lot. And they'd say, "Jack Grisham, please report to the sales tower if you're not with a marshal." You know, it was and that was one of the first places that they even accused me of being an alcoholic. Because I was missing for a while. About 10 days, I had gone off the books somewhere. I came back with my foot all wrapped up on crutches because I had popped an ankle running from the police. And I showed up to see if I had any money there. And to make sure that my job was still here. And the guy goes, "Well, Jack, we love you. But we think you might have a problem with the alcohol and the drugs." I was offended. I looked at him all wrapped up, bandaged up, stinking like booze. I looked at him and said, "The nerve, you bastard, man. You think of alcohol and drugs. I injured my foot. You stink. I can't smell it." Just like, and sometimes I think, how could we even, you know, not to bring up this silly joke, but we might as well, it's Friday. So, sometimes I wonder how any of us even wake up at all. Do you ever wonder that? Because most of us are hanging out with people that are doing what we're doing. It wasn't like I was at church going through, sitting through a sermon, and then after the sermon going, "Hey, you guys want to get some booze and some blow and rob the liquor store?" It's like, I wasn't saying that. I was hanging out with criminals. I'm looking across a table at the guy who is just as bad or worse than me. I'm looking at him, a mirrored reflection of the people I attracted. You know, they talk about we won't mix. No, we don't mix normally, but you get some booze in us, we mix, baby. We're mixing. You know, I don't care race, creed, or color. You and I start drinking together, and all of a sudden, we're solid. We're tight. I'm mixing with you. Anyway, and sometimes I wonder how any of us, when we attract that sometimes and we're surrounded with these people, how we even wake up. It's like a bunch of pigs in a sty. And then all of a sudden, one of the pigs sticks his nose up and goes, "Do you smell that? Do you smell that? No, I don't smell it." How do we wake up? Anyway, I couldn't make a living. And some of you guys that say, "Oh, well, I go to work every day." Is that really a living? Nah, you're just paying the bills, bud. There's a big difference between living and existing. That was my dad's excuse. My dad came in here on a court card. He'd hear these guys talking about all the jobs they lost and blah, 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 and how many times they've been to prison, blah, blah, blah. My dad had never been to prison. My dad was a Depression era, 30 years in the service. You take any job you can to feed your family. There is no such thing as a job below you. You are not humbling yourself to work a job. You're feeding your family. That's what my dad said. My dad came in here listening to all this crap, and he ran himself right back out because he's not an alcoholic, because that didn't apply to him. He was existing. He was not living. My dad died at 56 years old from this disease. That's about as old as I am now. Trips me out looking in the mirror thinking that I'm my dad's age when that happened. My father and I never got along. Because of working this program, the longest conversation I ever had with my father was at his grave. And I realized after making that amends and kneeling down on that grave that that was the longest I had ever spoken to that man. And it took me years before I went from hurt, anger, resentment to, I wish my dad would have stayed here. I wish my dad would have ran into somebody that didn't talk all that crap. I wish my dad would have ran into somebody that actually worked a program instead of bragged about how screwed up their life is. Anyway, we had a feeling of uselessness. Yeah, I hated myself. I hated myself. There is nothing worse to be in the middle of alcohol, in your cups or whatever you want to say. Growing up in a family like that, with that order of how you're supposed to treat your kids, and then having a daughter and realizing you don't live up to it. You don't live up to this. You're a scumbag. You're trash. You're an animal. Your kid would do better off without you. My daughter has a letter that I wrote her when I was drunk. She still has it. She was a baby. She was 1 year old. And I wrote her a letter about what a shitty dad I was in a drunken stupor kind of thing, right in one of those letters. That's how I felt. When I sobered up and realized what was going on with my kid, it hurt. The alcohol was a solution. The pills for the jitters in the morning were a solution. I had the jitters. I am so much like those guys in the Big Book that I was shocked when I realized how much like them I was. When I started reading and studying that book after being sober for 5 years before I could even understand what was going on in that thing, and start realizing that I was exactly like those men, exactly like those women and those men, exactly. I remember a guy telling me one time, he said, just write your name on the book, bud, because that's you. You're that book. And that's what I was, exactly that book. When there was new booze, it was pills for the jitters. And when I was taking pills for the jitters, now I'm taking pills for the jitters and drinking. Exactly like Bill and Bob said. Exactly like in our book. And I remember sometimes I'd mention it to me that at a meeting, somebody would get on me, like I'm doing something wrong. It's like, then what do you want to do? Take Bill's story out? Do you want to take those stories out? Because that's what he talks about, and that's what I was doing. I couldn't stand being sober. Anyway, couldn't be of real help to other people. How can you be a help when you're the one that needs it? When you're the one sitting there and everything you need and all the attention's on you and you're the one that's screwed up and the family's fine, everybody's fine because you're the problem. You are the problem. And you stay the problem until you're sober, and after being sober for a while, then you start realizing the whole family's full of it. They're all on something. They're all doing something. But at the time, you're the problem, not them. Anyway, and shouldn't the solution to these bedevilments be more important than whether we see newsreels of lunar flight? Yeah, of course. But the other problem with me is I didn't understand that alcohol was a problem. I thought that alcohol was a solution. That's what I was like. I was insane. I thought it worked. I thought it was working. I did not know it was hurting me. I didn't know it was hurting me until after I'd been stopped for some time. For some time. I'll tell you how I even got to here, how I got to you guys. Like I said, I was living at my mom's house. I'm living at my mom's. I got warrants out for my arrest. Big deal. I always got warrants out for my arrest. That's how you pay tickets. It's sad if you laughed at that. Because you tell that joke to a normie, they don't laugh. They don't even know what you're talking about. It's like, you know, I have people trying to kill me, both real and imagined. Like I said, I got one girl with a pregnant here at the house. I run off and marry another one. I'm drinking. I'm hanging out. I'm doing whatever. Mommy's taking care of me. I don't have a car. The car's gone. I'm now an action figure without a vehicle. And you ask any kid if an action figure without a vehicle is cool. They will tell you no. You can go down 5 or 6 years old. Hey, did a vehicle come with that action figure? Oh, you bet it did. What if you get an action figure without a vehicle? Oh, no, that's not good. No, I'd lost my vehicle. An action figure without a vehicle. Bad news. Any young child knows that. Even at 27, you know that's bad. And how I got to you guys is a buddy of mine got arrested on a cocaine trafficking charge. Now, I thought that was funny, right? I mean, it's funny because the guy's obnoxious. And he got arrested on this charge, and I'm laughing. And he goes to court, and he says that he has a problem. Are you kidding me? He didn't have a problem 2 weeks before that. I was getting loaded with him. There was no problem mentioned at all. It wasn't like, hey, you know what, Jack? I think I got a problem. I'm going to set out on that last line of blow. Why don't you clean that up for us? No, there was no problem mentioned. It was, are you cutting that even, dude? There had no problem mentioned whatsoever. His drinking was not a problem. His recreational cocaine use was not a problem. Until he got arrested. Now it's a problem. He's about 5'6", curly blonde hair with freckles, little surfer boy, and we're living in Long Beach, and that means L.A. County. So yes, indeed, he does have a problem. He goes to court, says he's got a problem, they send him to treatment. And whatever you H&I guys are doing up there in treatment, pumping them all full of the spirit or whatever the hell is going on up in there, that's what you did. And he came back to Long Beach as a reformer. As a reformer. Now, the big book says we're not supposed to start out as reformers. We're not supposed to be reformers. That's what it says. But that's what he did. Came back as a reformer, this walking hand in hand with Bill, Bob, and Jesus thing, or whatever's going on. And he's going to save the neighborhood. And where's his first stop? My mother's house. Stop number one. A prime candidate, or protege, as the book says. He found himself a protege, and he comes to my mom's house. But anyway, real quick, this book says a lot of fun stuff in here. Like I said before, I'm a book guy. I love the big book, and I'm a book guy. I do a Monday night meeting at my house on Monday night. And God, see? I'm so much smarter now that I've been sober. Anyway, we do this Monday night meeting at my house, and we sit there from 6 to 6:45, and we go through the big book line by line. Okay, it's October now. We started in January. We're on page 24. Line by line, we go through that thing. I push that book up people's asses line by line every Monday night. Go through that book. I'm a fan of the big book. I will sit there and gladly argue big book with you all day long. But guess what? It's just a book. This is just a book. There's no magic pixie dust in this book. If you think you can just study, learn this book, and that's going to get you sober, good luck, champ. Good luck on that one. I hear guys go, read the big book and you won't drink. Really? Because Hank, that wrote the chapter to the employers, got drunk. Well, skip his chapter. Read that other one over there. Look, it's like any information. It is wonderful. If you are awake, if you wake up, if you realize you got a fatal illness that only a connection to a power greater than yourself can help, and this we might have a roadmap to that power, then you bet every single word in here is beautiful and powerful and wonderful and great. If you're not awake, you can memorize every period in this book. And I've had guys do that. You know, there's 70 periods on page 35. What the fuck? Really? What does that mean? It means stop. Oh, killer, man. You and your sponsor worked that one out, bud? Solid. I've sat with guys while they're drinking on a 12-step call, not just dropping them off down at the hospital. We're actually sitting there with the guy while he's drinking, trying to get help him out here. I have actually sit and had pages of this book thrown back at me. Well, do you know what it says on page 162? Yeah, I do. Have you applied it?
Oh, that's bullshit, Jack.
You know, whatever it is. It's like, I don't care this. I mean, I love this, but it doesn't help if you're not awake. If you're not awake, this is worthless. And they even used to say it. They said, hey, let the guy's head get clear, man. You're not even dealing with a clear head. We do not lay this part of the program on somebody with a head fouled with booze. Sometimes I think it's crazy how the guys in these recovery houses, they got these study in big book on day one. The dude's not even awake. Go study Rocky and Bullwinkle, man. Put him in front of a TV with a broom. You know what I'm saying? Like one floor of the cuckoo's nest. Get these crazy sweeping floors, man. You want them anyway? All right, that's a whole nother issue. All right. Anyway, but the book is fun, and there's a lot of fun stuff in here. And I always tell people, hey, you got to remember that when these guys made this, they wanted to sell it. That was the plan. The plan was, can you imagine? Think we got no money. We're alcohol. Maybe there's some alcoholics in here. All right, so we're alcoholics. We got no money. Things are bad all over. And we come up with a solution to alcoholism. We are going to sell this shit, Bob. We are going to sell this. We got Hank. Hank's in. We're going to Rockefellers. We know people, baby. We are going to sell this. They tried to sell it. That was the plan. They tried to sell it. They wanted the money. They tried to sell it. And guess what? Nobody wanted it. That's why we give it away. And it's so funny because even after all these years, they still don't realize nobody wants it. Because you will get new people that want to stay sober. There's a whole bunch of new people that want to stay sober. They want to stay out of jail. They want to get back in the big bed. They want to make money at work. They want to be sober. But they do not want to connect with a power greater than themselves. And that's what this is about. So they may want to be sober, but they don't want this. And the people that do want this get it. And the people that don't want it, you cannot shove it down their throats. Doesn't work. Anyway, knowing that they wanted to hustle this book, knowing that they wanted to sell it, right? I'm watching TV and I'm reading the big book. I got the big book on my lap, which is sad, but whatever. I love it. So I'm sitting there reading. I read it for fun sometimes. I actually enjoy it. I like it. It's a fun book. Anyway, so I'm thinking about Bill and Hank and them being hustlers and what they're doing and all that. And all of a sudden, a commercial on TV comes on for Viagra. Or what's the other one? Thank you. I'm joking. Come on. Everybody, somebody always says that. You know what I mean? It's like you can just count on. Oh, Cialis. Oh, okay, buddy. All right. What's that they use? The other one they use? Oh, yeah. Okay. So anyway. So I'm watching it, and the commercial's actually kind of funny. If you ever see one of those commercials, it's funny because it's like a really nice scene. You know what I mean? It's like a man and a woman, and it's nice, and they're winking, and the guy's like rubbing his pant leg a little bit. Not like, you know what I mean? Just like a casual rub down the pant leg to imply, but not to cross a line, right? And, you know, and she's winking, and he's smiling, and then a smooth voice comes in, and it says, "Tonight's the night, baby." "And when it goes down, you will be ready." I'm going, yeah, I'm watching it, right? I'm kind of looking for my wife at the time. And I'm watching, I'm going, oh, that's badass. That's badass, right? And I'm laughing. Because what is that? It's the sales pitch for you are going to get it on. And it's going to be good. And you'll be ready. So then, God's will, or whatever it is, I just happen to have the big book open on my lap, and I look down, and guess what? I find the sales pitch for Alcoholics Anonymous. And here it is here. So let me just paint a quick picture for you. There's Bill on his motorcycle. Bob is in the sidecar. It's a moonlit night. Bill's rubbing his pant leg. Bob's winking back at him. And as they say in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, speaking the language of the gutter when he did it. Because, of course, you know, Bob spoke the language of the gutter. I didn't know if you were aware of that. But he wasn't welcome at this one guy's country club because he spoke the language of the gutter. What does that mean? Bob's dropping F-bombs at dinner? What's happening there, right? Anyway, so Bill's there rubbing his pant leg. Bob's there smiling at him, blah, blah, blah. The scene's painted, beautiful moonlit night. And all of a sudden, this voice comes in. "Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives." Right? I mean, you can just see Bob going, yeah, get it, Bill, get it, you know, whatever, right? And I'm laughing, because I'm laughing, I'm reading this, and I'm laughing. It's the sales pitch. We want the new man and new woman, when they pick up the book and read it, we want them to go, yeah, the bright spot of my life, man, coming up, it's coming up. But then, what happens at the end of the commercial? When the rubbing, tugging, winking, all of that's over, all of a sudden a new voice comes in. A higher pitched voice comes in and it says, "Hey, if that lasts longer than 4 hours, you need to call somebody." That voice comes in, right? It's like warning you, "Hey man, there's a problem here." Well, guess what? God's will. I flipped over a few more pages and found the fine print of Alcoholics Anonymous. If I may read that to you in a different voice. "It may mean the loss of many nights' sleep, great interference with your pleasures, interruptions to your business. It may mean sharing your money in your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time of the day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. A drunk may smash the furniture in your home or burn a mattress. You may have to fight with him if he is violent. Sometimes you'll have to call a doctor and administer sedatives under his direction. Another time you may have to send for the police or an ambulance." Oh, hey, I didn't write it, man. So, you know what's so funny? Sometimes people get mad at me for saying that. They get mad at me. They go, you're disrespecting AA. Bullshit. Look at the 300,000 miles on my car and tell me I'm disrespecting AA, pal. Look at my commitments. Look at my commitments to the program that I've made in 27 years. I'm still the cigarette butt guy at the Saturday meeting 26 years later. I'm still picking up butts. Don't tell me I disrespect AA because I read something that they wrote. I didn't write it. Blame Bill. What's that thing in Let's Go to Prison? Write your resentment to Bill on a piece of paper. Fold it up and stick it up your... Anyway, so... All right, now going back to the evening with my friend coming to get me. So this guy comes over to my mother's house, so just ADD swing with me. When I go, you go, and we'll have a good time. So we're back to my friend, getting out of court, comes over to my mother's house. I got warrants, craziness going on. And this guy tells me, knocks on the door, and he says, you're an alcoholic. I said, I am not. I live with my mother. And then I walk him away from the front door because I don't want my mom hearing that kind of talk out on our porch. I walk out and he says, come to a meeting with me. I go, a meeting? A meeting of what? And he goes, 12-step meeting. Come on down. No. No, man. You go. I say, you get busted, champ. You go. He goes, come to a meeting. I go, no. Come to a meeting. No. Come to a meeting. No. Come on. No. Come on. No. Come. No. Come on. Come. No. Come. No. Come. No. Come to a meeting. No. Come to a meeting. No. Come to a meeting. No. Come on. Come to a meeting. No. Come on. Come to a meeting. Okay. I'll go. Now, do you know why I said I'll go? It's because I'm an alcoholic. And I'll say anything to get you to leave me alone, including I'm Jack Grisham and I'm an alcoholic. Now, I got a problem with Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a couple problems with Alcoholics Anonymous. And guess what? I'm still sober. I have a problem with us and I'm still sober. Do you know that Bill Wilson also had a problem with us? There is a reason we have those 12 traditions. And they're not because he thought we were doing a great job. That was a fear-based decision that worked out wonderfully for us, if we follow them. Could you imagine creating something this cool and knowing he was going to leave it in our hands? No wonder we've got those traditions. We are the problem. They're not the problem. And it's been written before, if AA will fall, it will be from the inside, not the outside. We are the problem. That's why those traditions were written. Because we are the problem. One of the problems I have with certain parts of AA is we are too quick to get the new man and the new woman to say they're an alcoholic. And we have people claiming alcoholism and they don't even know what they've got. And you make them say it. Say you're an alcoholic. Say you're an alcoholic. Don't say addict, God damn it. Say you're an alcoholic. Say you're an alcoholic. Oh, I'm an alcoholic. But they don't know what it means. And then you watch these new guys coming up and getting chips. Brand new, come up and get a chip. And they get, you know, they're happy. They're coming up and get the chip. And we're clapping. And they're happy. Do you know why they're happy? Because they don't know what they've got. If they knew what they had, they wouldn't be happy about it. Nowhere else in the world do you tell somebody they got a fatal illness, they go, yeah! Did it! With a chip! Can you imagine, man? You got stomach cancer, here's your chip. Yeah! Yeah! What? What? No! And even if they say it, you think they believe it? No, they don't believe it. They're just saying it. But do they believe it? You know why you can tell they don't believe it? Because they don't do anything. They'll sit there in a meeting. They'll say, hey, I'm an alcoholic. They'll claim a fatal illness. This is a fatal, in case anybody in here was new, I don't know if anybody, they probably didn't tell you out front, but I'm going to tell you right now, you've got a fatal illness. Chances are, you've got a fatal illness. And guess what? Probably no one in this room or anyone out there or anyone in any other room can help you. You're screwed. Now what? Where are you going for help? Where are you looking for help? You think your sponsor's going to help you? You think anybody's going to help you? You think somebody's going to strap a rope around your waist 24 hours a day and ride on your back? You think that's what we can do? You're going to put all your power in your sponsor? You're going to put all your power in the group? What happens when you're alone? What happens when you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and the urge to drink's on you? Where's your pal now, bud? Where's that rope around your waist now? What about when you're in the car and all of a sudden you're just driving and bam, the urge to drink hits you and you know a phone call would help and getting on your knees would help and getting a hold of a sponsor would help, and this says, but you're not going to do any of those, are you? You're going anyway. Fatal, man. Fatal. Killing people. And people don't realize it. They don't understand it. Try to get somebody to see it. Like I said before, when these guys sit there and they say they got a fatal illness, they're going to die, they don't do a damn thing. They go out and get a cookie and vape. I got a fatal illness. It's probably going to take me out. You want a cookie? And I got this new honey oil vape. That's not right. Nobody even smokes honey oil anymore, Patrick. Take it easy. All right, anyway. But so they say they got a fatal illness, but they don't do anything. And if they knew and believed that they had a fatal illness, guess what? You can tell because they start doing shit. That's how you can tell. I've been shot at a number of times before, as you can imagine. And I'll tell you, when you're getting shot at, everyone around you goes down on the ground. When the shots are firing, everyone goes down. They all go down and their voices go up like 2 octaves. Did you see which way it's coming from? It's like, boom, everybody's down, right? It's not until the guy drives off, then they stand up and go, I would have beat his ass, man. Yeah, Pee-wee Herman, you would have kicked his ass. I see that, you know. It's like, look, why? But here's a question. Why do they go down? When they're getting shot at, why do they go down? Because they think they're going to get hit. They think they're going to die. So they jump down, they move, they do something to save their life. Because they realize they are going to die without that action. New man or new woman comes in here and they say they're an alcoholic, claim a fatal illness. They don't duck. They don't jump. They don't go down. They don't look around this room and say, this guy's sober forever, this guy's sober, this woman's sober forever, I'm going to get it, I'm going to get it, I'm going to get it, I'm going to get involved, I'm going to do this. I don't need somebody to tell me to go to a meeting anymore because I know I'm going to die. And if I know I'm going to die, I don't need you to tell me to run. I'm running. Tiger's after me, I'm running. I don't need a sponsor to go, I think you should run, young man. That might be the good decision right here. Bitch, I'm already running and he's getting eaten because he's 48 years sober and 98 years old. And I'm faster than him. He's gone down. I'm going. I don't need you to tell me to run, sir. I am running. I hope you smell like meat. I'm running. But the new guy comes in here and says they're an alcoholic and they don't run, they don't dive, and they don't jump because they don't believe it. They don't believe it. And I love it sometimes, you know, I have no trouble busting people's balls because you can't kick me out of here. And I bust a lot of balls, man. And I don't mind. I don't care. Somebody told me one time, they said, you use the podium for a weapon. I said, quit destroying our program and you won't be hurt. Quit treating our program the way you treat it. My words will stop hurting you. Anyway. Sometimes I hear these guys say, I make my men do a first step. I make my men do a first step before we proceed. Really? Really? You make your man or woman concede to their innermost self that they're an alcoholic. How do you do that?
Well, God damn it. So I make them do a third step. I get them right down on their knees, right in the parking lot, where it is, right down on their knees. I get them. I tell them, no embarrassment. Get down on your knees and turn your will and your life over the care of God.
Are you kidding me? You should go to the Middle East. You're needed. They have been trying to get each other to submit to the will of God for years, and it has not worked out. And you cannot make someone concede to their innermost self that they're an alcoholic. And how do we know if they have? That's what's interesting. Why did they not put honest in the preamble? Because who's to say who's got an honest desire or not? Who's to say who's conceded or not? I could tell you there was plenty of people that didn't think I conceded, but I did. And I'm still sitting here. And a lot of those heroes and those quick candle burners are gone. And I'm still here, right here, doing exactly what I did at the start. The same thing. How do we tell when someone's conceded? I see people sometimes and they say, I relapsed after so many years. Really? Did you really relapse after so many years? Or did you just not concede to your innermost self that it wouldn't ever work again? The big book doesn't talk about, you know, Bob talked about for good and for all. Are you done for good and for all? Not just for today, and one day at a time thing. That's emotionally how we work this thing. Are you done for good and for all? Are you done with it? Do you still think alcohol means freedom, relief, conviviality? Or do you think alcohol means death? Which is it? Because when you relapsed, you thought it meant relief. So did you really concede? No. You just took a break. Just a respite from the disease. Playing a game. And then all of a sudden, your head said, and this is going to help. I heard a girl talk in a meeting. I live down in Huntington Beach, recovery capital of the world. Everybody's on a bicycle. Nobody's got a license down there. You know? It's like, sometimes I think about just taking them out. But anyway, and then I pray to God and it goes away. But anyway, and then another voice starts. But I was in this meeting one time and I heard this girl and she told this horrific story about her last relapse, right? She said she was raped. Her boyfriend died. Ended up in jail, blah, blah, blah. She tells all this story, this horrific story. And at the end she says, and I feel like drinking. And it really got me. And I thought, well, what is she really saying? Because I like to listen to people. Sadly, I like to go to meetings and listen to people when they talk. And try to say, what is this person really saying to me? What are they trying to convey? What are these people doing? And what I realized, what this young woman was doing, is that her emotional definition of what it was to drink had not changed. In her head, she still thought page 151. That's what she thought. This was in her head. When she would get stressed out, angry, or whatever was going on, she would think drinking means conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. A drink means release from care, boredom, and worry. A drink is joyous intimacy with friends and feeling that a life is good. And so when she's stressed out, things aren't going well, job's not working, everything, she feels uncomfortable, and her thought is, this is what a drink means? What do you think she's doing? Don't go take a drink. A drink does not mean that to me. A drink means crap your pants, slit your wrists, and go to jail. That never sounds good. Oh, I got a flat tire. Well, I'll just shit my pants right here. No, that's not what's going to happen, pal. And what's so interesting is, one time I had a new man and he had done some work. He had made an amends. He made an amends. And he was stoked. He wanted to talk to me about the amends he made, right? And he goes, Jack, I made amends to my sister. And I said, okay, what happened? What happened? He goes, oh, I was scared at first. I was nervous. I was kind of, you know, it's like, it's trippy for me. I've never done this. You know, I felt nervous. I was kind of excited, you know, and I went in and I told her what I'd done and I said I was sorry and I said that I loved her and that I wished I was a better brother and, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, you know what, man? She started crying and she looked back at me and she said, God, I wish I was a better sister and I love you and I'm so happy that you're sober. And he goes, and I hugged her. We like hugged and it was cool. I go, well, how'd you feel? He goes, well, first I felt excited and a little scared. And then I felt warm. And then I felt connected. And then I felt loved. And I let him sit with it for a second. I said, let me ask you. When you went out to get loaded, what were you doing? He goes, well, I was a little excited and nervous. He goes, and I was looking to feel connected. And I was looking to feel warm. And I was looking to feel loved. I go, you just got connected, warm, love, and a little bit nervous by working our program. How does that feel? What has replaced it now? This replaces it. So when we think about, when I hear people say, hey, I want to get loaded. No, you don't, man. You want to get loved. You want to get connected. You want to get warm. You want to feel like it's going to be okay, like something good's coming. And that's what you get from working the steps, not from getting loaded. Getting loaded gets you to jail. Getting loaded loses a family. Getting loaded gets you dead. The drink does that. The program does the opposite. Anyway, I'll probably wrap this up, and I just want to talk a little bit about God. It's such a strange thing. When I got here, I believed in God real strong because I never thought about God. I never thought about it. I never read. I never studied. You know, I'm one of those guys that studies. I'll read any book. You know, I'm not afraid of an opposing viewpoint. You know, if this book right here, if you're afraid to challenge it, then it's weak and it doesn't belong. We challenge this because it's strong. It's okay to challenge it. It's okay to put it to the test. When a new guy comes to me and challenges this book, I say, yeah, challenge the book. And let me talk about what the book has done for me. And let me talk about how that line has changed me. Let me talk about the power that has come from this book. Please challenge it. Please. I'm not afraid to be challenged. Because it works. Anyway, I believed in God because I never read about it. I was a Christian because I didn't really study and I didn't know what went into this book and what it is into that book. And I'll tell you, at this time now, 27 years of being sober, I'm more of an agnostic than I was when I came in because I don't know what's going on. I know that something's going on. I just don't know what the hell it is. And I don't know what to call it. It's like the microwave. I don't know what goes on in there. Something crazy is going on up in that microwave. I have no idea what's happening. But guess what? I know how to cook a weenie in it. Damn. I put my weenie in there, and I can pull it out 30 seconds later and have a nice toasty hot dog. Now, I don't know what the hell happened in there. The magic elves that are cooking that shit up in there. I mean, I stand and try to look. They tell me don't put my face on the glass. But I know something's happening. I can boil water. I can do some shit over there with that microwave. I have no idea what it is. Do you know there's a thing where they say that to take the Lord's name in vain is not to use it as a curse, but it's to have the vanity for you to say that you know what God is. That's the vanity. That you will put a name on a power so great that you will never understand it and not know what it is. But you're going to name it. And you're going to classify it. And you're going to tell us exactly how that power works. I tried that. Didn't work. It's called controlling God. That's what it's called. Doesn't work. So I don't know what's up there. I don't know what's going on. But I know how to cook a weenie in it. And it works quite well. I learned God from my kids. I'm going to tell you two quick God stories. When I was brand new, my daughter was 10 and I was 9. She had a year more than me at the time. She does not any longer. But she did then. She had a year more than me. Now, I made amends to her mom. The first amends was greeted with F you. You kidding me? It's like, you know, it's so funny. We think that people are all stoked on us. They're not stoked on you, man. I don't know where you're coming up with that. When you're brand new making an amends, they're not stoked. They're basically giving you a hug and telling you I love you with a little stick, kind of keeping you separated a little bit. Oh, I love you too, sweetheart. Let's see how this goes. I've seen this before. You know what I mean? How many times? How many times you said you're sorry? How many times? You know, how many times promised be good, better boy, better husband, better wife? You said it. Said it to the kids. How many times you let them down? The guys in the big book let their wives and husbands, kids down all the time. All the time. They always meant it when they said they're sorry. They meant it. But they're dealing with a mental illness. And I don't care if you mean it. You got this that doesn't care if you mean it. I've had guys sitting across the table crying at me, telling me they got to be sober this time. And I look right at them and say, too bad. Too bad for you, bud. Why? Because you mean it? You know how many people have ran through our rooms meaning it? And then guess what? 3 or 4 days later, they just don't mean it as much anymore. And when the drug tests stop and they're not in danger of being fired and they're back in the big bed, guess what? Now they hardly mean it at all. A couple more weeks later, and they forgot they even had a problem until it happens again. And then they mean it one more time. Anyway, I made amends to her mom. It was greeted with F you. I say, I'm sober for 9 months. 9 months? You've been an asshole for 26 years. 9 months? No, thank you. Then I started paying child support. I love a lot of these hard-hitting dads around here. And then when you start to get to know them and dig in deep, you find out how they treat their wife and kids. They're not in their lives. They're not paying child support. And they're going to come in here as a good member AA? You're kidding me. I've seen it. I've done investigation. I've talked to people. I have seen it. Pay your bills. You want to be a good dad. Show up for your kids. You want to be a good dad. I started paying my bills, being a good dad, showing up, taking my daughter, trying to be in her life. First it was greeted with F you, then it was greeted with you can see your daughter for a couple hours, then you can see her for a weekend, and I didn't know how to take care of my kid. I would give my daughter back 3 days later wearing the same clothes she came in. I don't change mine. She don't need to change hers. She would get hungry, I'd say, what do you want, some Skittles? What are we having, dear? You know, it's like, Daddy loves the Skittles. You take the red, I'll take the green. Well, let's have dinner together. This is wonderful. I would give her back after 3 days dirty and a mess, and it would be a fight. I'd give her back at an AA meeting, found a safe ground. Oh, meet me at the meeting. I'll give the kid back, right? You know? Guess what? It'd be a fight. Know who saved me? Not the men. Not the men. Nope. If you go to only men's meetings thinking you're going to learn how to be a man, good luck on that, champ. I learned how to be a man by the women taught me how to be a man. You ask a guy what he thinks, you're going to get an answer. Go ask a woman what she thinks, you're going to get another answer. Hey, we're going to the track tonight. I can't go, I got my kid. Bring her. That's a wonderful idea. And I did. Can you imagine fighting with a 5-year-old at the ticket line over what horse you're going to bet on? You know, crazy. Anyway, the women said, no, Jack, man, clean her up, feed her, change her clothes. She came with a bag. And I learned how to be a good dad because of the women taught me how to be a good dad. I remember guys used to get on me for having a woman sponsor. It's like, dude, I'm married. I got daughters. Why wouldn't I talk to a woman? You're a nut. Why wouldn't I use a fellow spiritual person traveling along this road with me? She's a lesbian. I don't want to sleep with her. She's more of a man than I am. Although, and I'm not going to say who, but one of my friends did try to pick up on her. Anyway, but. All right, that's it. Sorry, that is an outside issue. Anyway. So you guys taught me how to be a good dad, and I was a great dad. And one time my wife, my ex, they were going to move. And so my daughter was going to have to switch schools in the middle of the school year. And I didn't want her to do that. So I went to her mother, a woman that I lied to, cheated on, abused, whatever. But because of you guys working a program, showing up, paying my child support, doing what I'm supposed to do, I went with her and said, hey, is it okay if I take, can Anna come and live with me so she doesn't have to switch schools? And her mom said, yeah. She can live with you. That was her only daughter, and she let her stay with me. When my daughter came, I volunteered at school. I did everything that a good dad does, man. I did all that stuff. And one day, after school, I went outside to see what the kids are doing. We got a garage separate from the house. And I walked out to see what the kids are doing, and I go to turn the door, and the door's locked. I go, hey, I go, open up, it's dad. And I hear, he's outside. I go, whoa, 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 whoa. Hey, hey, hey. Let's go, open up, sweetie. It's dad, open up. Just a minute, dad. I'm going to be there in 1 minute. Hide that stuff, put it under the couch. He's right outside. I go, whoa, whoa, hey, let's go. Open up, open it, open it, open it. Just a minute. Open the door, I'm feared in 50 states. Just started screaming outside. I'm going nuts. Open the door, open the goddamn door. Pound on the door, open it, open it, open it. I'm feared in 50 states. Ah, open it, open it. Finally, they open it. The smell of smoke and cheap perfume comes out of there. I go, they're smoking. And I walk in, veins out of my neck. Walking in, looking around. I was raised in a house loaded with physical abuse. Beaten till I couldn't stand up, tied up, thrown into my room. I ran away when I was 11 or 12, gone for 2 weeks with a carny. No one looked for me. No one came. No one looked for me. No one gave a shit what was going on. And nobody answered any screams from a child coming out of my house. That's how I was raised. And there's two ways you go after that. You either suck it in and implode, or you explode. And you take down anyone that gets near you or touches you. And that's what I did. You cross me, you're getting a beating. I don't care who you are. I'm in. I'm in. Unbeaten. I'm in. So I'm angry, furious, pissed off at this kid, veins around the neck, full of anger, full of rage. I come in there, all this stuff, and I look at this little girl's face looking at me, and she is terrified. And I see her face looking back at me, terrified, and I'm sickened by what I see. I'm sickened by her reaction to her dad. And I start crying. I get tears in my eyes. I think, oh God, please don't let me hurt this little girl. Please don't let me hurt this. Please, God, don't let me hurt this little girl. Guess what came into my mind? The 11th step. In the big book, such a powerful step. We go directly to God. We don't go to a committee. We don't go to a sponsor. We don't go to a friend. We go directly to God. Here's the heart. God resides within. This is the closest phone call I can make. Right here. I don't got to pick up a cell phone, dime, quarter, nothing. Right here. Whatever power that cooks weenies is in here. And I'm reaching right inside saying, help, help, help. And guess what? That power answered and it said, you got it, champ. You got it. And for that 1 second, all that hate, all that anger, all that rage was removed. Instantly. And I looked at my daughter and I said, sweetheart, I go, God, I love you so much. I go, I love you so much, sweetheart. I go, let me tell you what happened to me when I started rolling smokes. And I talked to her like one alcoholic talking to another. I talked to her with love, with kindness, with empathy. And then I said, now clean that shit up and get your ass inside. I turned around and I walked out of that room. When I walked out of that room, I paused. And I thought, what just happened in there? What was that? I go, I walked in there, I caught your own smokes, I didn't beat her, send her to hell, curse her with AIDS, cancer, HIV. I said, none of that. I said, I caught your own smokes and I love you. I love you. And then I thought to myself, if I'm a human being with the capacity to love that I have, if I love that little girl so much that if she ever reached out and said, Father, please, and put her hands out, I'd pick her up and I'd just hold her to my heart and love her with all I had. And I thought, if I love that little girl so much, how much does God love me? And all of a sudden, a warmth came over me. It was crazy. It was like a couple of Valiums on a Christmas Eve. It was just a warmth. And I realized that I was forgiven. That I was forgiven for anything I had ever done. I felt that love. You know, it's so interesting. A lot of people throw out the word surrender, surrender, surrender. Surrender does not appear in our program. It's not in there. The word surrender does not appear, but there is a word that does appear in there, and it's called abandon. Abandon is from the French, and it means to derelict. Set it down, turn your back, walk away. Set down self. Turn your back. Walk away. Abandon yourself to this. And I abandoned myself to this. Ever since then. Still here. And I'll end with this. I wanted to get close to God. Like I said, I'm agnostic. And it's crazy. I have guys going, God, for an agnostic, you sure quote the Bible a lot. Yeah, I read it a lot. I read all sorts of stuff. And I do quote it because there's some great quotes in there. Anyway, like the James one, you know, faith without works is dead. Know why they were saying that? Because everybody was running around saying, I believe in God, I believe in God. And James goes, so what? So what? You tell me you believe in God. Even demons believe in God. Go show me you believe in God by the way you treat people. That's what he said. That's why faith without works came in. Show me by your works. Anyway, I wanted to be baptized. So I'm going to church to church to church looking for what we got in here. And I'm just not seeing it. For me, maybe I couldn't see it. Maybe I could see it now, but I couldn't see it then. I'd hear them talking about lepers being healed or whatever. I'm saying, do you guys got any new pamphlets out of Jerusalem or something? You know, wait, is there something new coming out here? What's happening? Because they're talking about lepers being healed years ago, and I sit in rooms with lepers. Which is, I mean, have you ever seen the newcomer walk in here? Eyes, just black. Black. They are like, they are the modern, the alcoholic and the addict is the modern day leper.